Chapter 15. The Asher Lord's pronouncement made my shoulders deflate like a hot air balloon.
"The guy who watched over the Sun Temple is dead?" I asked, as a cold feeling spread throughout my gut.
"How?"
"I'm afraid you're not asking the right questions, Alex Brightwood," the councilman said, as he strode forward with his arms folded behind his back. "The most pertinent one being, why was Keeper Golan killed?"
I glanced furtively at the Ramlord and tried to keep my face from telegraphing the fact that the last time Mech and I both saw the Keeper, he'd just inducted me and the little hedgehog friar into some super-secret club tasked with finding out more about the temple sabotage.
"Don't worry, lad. Gavlane has long filled me in on his suspicions,"
the Osprey man said, in that uncanny way he had of plucking the thoughts right off my face. He then offered up his palm and revealed a small silver disc no bigger than a 50-cent piece. At first, it took me a moment to remember where I had seen the object, but when I did, I glanced at Mech to be sure.
"This was the medallion Horus plucked off Gordo and his lackey when they tried to ambush me, isn't it?" I asked.
"The very same," Mech said with a scowl. "Shortly after you gave it to me, I passed it over to Kane. There are laboratories on Alem that are better equipped than the academies here on Nata."
"A very intriguing item your friend Horus managed to find,"
the Osprey man said, and held the object up between two fingers.
"Did you manage to find out where it is from?"
Mech asked, as he took the medallion from him.
"It is Terran in origin,"
Shakane said, and pulled out a twisted metal shard.
"This is also Terran, and made from the same material. It was retrieved from the wreckage of the temple."
"But Ambassador Siskern told me he'd never seen anything of such a quality as this anywhere on Tur,"
the Ramlord argued.
"Not even their hottest forges can craft this type of metal."
"The High Priestess herself has assessed the worldly components of both and has deemed it so,"
the councilman said,
"which is more likely the mystery I think our cleric friend died for.
So if we can figure out how, or more importantly, who forged this steel, then we might be closer to some answers," I said.
"Indeed,"
the Osprey man nodded and handed me the shard.
"I hear you are acquainted with the old archivist Tovish. He will be a good resource to have, especially once Dolor's old estate is finally released under your status. See if you can contact him. A parameter of hearing your case is that you allow the council full disposal of every tome on the estate at any time, indefinitely."
"You guys want access to Dolor's old library?" I asked, as if I didn't know. Jenner first cast suspicion on the council's true motivation for making us go through the trial rigmarole. He mentioned if they could possibly overturn my legitimacy of my victory, then everything Dolor had would just be absorbed by them. The shrewd koala man was leery the council wanted something specific, and it seemed as if they had their sights set on the library just as much as we did. Surprise, surprise. Whatever was in there must be huge. And it was at that moment I was glad I told Jenner to wait on negotiating with the council. I was slowly learning to keep my cards as close to my chest as I could when dealing with duelist matters, and I worked really hard to school my face into an expression of innocence. The councilman's sharp gaze lingered on me for a half beat before he continued.
"It has been suspected for quite some time that Arcus's collection superseded all previous public knowledge. He began collecting arcane tomes and artifacts, and as his collection grew, so did his need for secrecy,"
the man said, and handed the medallion to Mech before striding to one of the stables in the carriage house, and the general air of authority radiating off him in waves made it clear Mech and I were to follow.
"It would be of great value to the council, and to the preservation of the Asher ways, if the collection's contents could be made available."
"Like a public library," I said, as we all reached the far end of the carriage house.
"In a sense,"
the Osprey man agreed, and gathered the reins of a handsome burgundy manipiller that reminded me of a Clydesdale. "So are you asking me for permission,
or is this where you start to list those parameters you mentioned? I crossed my arms over my chest and carefully made my face as deadpan as possible to see what the Osprey man would do next. For the first time, Shakane's solid mask of stoicism fractured just barely, and if I hadn't been looking for it, I would have missed the minute tightening of his square jaw. Mech picked up on it too, because his eyes got wide for a moment as if he couldn't believe how belligerent I was being. All of these little things told me what I needed to know, and before the councilman could form any more of an opinion, I seamlessly changed my tune. "Because I'll be honest, I don't even want that place," I shrugged, and kept my tone noncommittal. "Maybe once everything gets sorted on the council's end, they can just transfer it over, neat and tidy." Shakane's thin, mahogany eyebrows arched upward a millimeter.
"That could be arranged. Look for the officiate in a matter of days."
I sure hoped Horace remembered the way to break in, because that meant we only had a small window to get in, get what we needed, and forget the rest. Totally doable.
"Councilman Kane," Mech said again, and clasped hands with the Osprey man. "Much obliged."
"We'll be in touch, Gavlane," Shakane said, and mounted his steed.
But when he looked down at the Ramlord again, his eyes were hard.
"And remember what we talked about."
"Of course,"
Mech said mildly, but his usual smile was stiff and wooden.
"Brightwood,"
the councilman murmured, and I nodded my respect before he galloped away on his burgundy mount. "Something about that guy seems off," I stated, when it was just Mech and me once more.
"And you have apparently gone crazy to toe the line like that with one of the most powerful men in Avantol," he said, with an almost weary smile,
and then took a seat on a stack of grain sacks. "Gavlane?" I questioned, as the big man rubbed his forehead.
"What were you thinking, Alex?"
he asked me.
"Transferring your estate to the council?"
"Technically, the estate isn't mine either way once the council approves it, because I put it up for auction in order to get Velralla from the traders," I said.
"The traders are sacrosanct from any laws that govern the land."
He stared at me.
"Once an exchange is met, there is nothing anyone can do."
"Yeah," I said, and gripped the back of my neck. "I've been told I'm pretty productive on bed rest if you give me something to study. Jenner gave me a book on how the trader auctions worked, and it mentioned gray areas like that. I don't know what the protocol is from here, but let them figure it out. By the time they untangle themselves, we'll have gotten what we needed anyway."
"You..."
Gavlane kept staring at me like a codfish gasping for air.
"But that... how..."
"Take it easy, big guy," I chuckled. "I don't want you having a stroke on me." Then the Ramlord threw his head back and laughed so loud I heard the startled flapping of birds as they fled from their roosts in the carriage house eaves.
"Alex!"
he thundered, as he launched up from the grain sacks and clapped me on both shoulders.
"I knew you were clever, but I never thought how clever. For as long as I've lived, I've never known anyone to fool Shakane. He misses nothing."
"I noticed," I snorted.
"Kane is one to look out for in the future," the Ramlord said, and gestured for us to walk side by side. "He is not a man to be trifled with, and does not suffer those who slight his honor."
"I'll keep that in mind for the future," I said. "Gavlane, are you going to tell me more about why... all this?"
"I know you might be discouraged about me being less than forthcoming with information. But just trust me a little longer, my friend," he said. "The timing of such things is a delicate one."
"I trust you," I said. "But is there anything you can tell me, at least?"
"Have you glanced at that book I gave you after the hunts?" he asked.
"Half-book, you mean?" I scoffed. "Yeah, I glanced at it, but I can't understand a single word."
"Neither can I," Mech chuckled. "Neither can most people. But the point is not to read it, but to keep it safe from those who can."
"Then where's the second half?" I asked, as we left the carriage house. From where I was standing, I could see Horace was on top of the carriage and looking in our direction.
"Take a guess,"
he sighed. "Dolor's estate," I concluded. "You want me to find it, don't you?"
"It must be found,"
he said. "What even is it?" I asked. But by the way Mech pursed his lips regretfully, I knew what the answer was going to be. "You can't tell me, can you?" More secrets.
I understand it's frustrating, my friend. But I'm only trying to protect you, the Ramlord said, and the weary worry I glimpsed earlier shone through the crack of his facade. I took a deep breath and nodded my head. I understand. Thank you, Alex, he said, as a little of the ease returned to his frame, and his smile was no longer strained. You continue to help me more than you know.
Yeah, I know, I snarked, and shoved him in the shoulder.
Take care of yourself.
He suddenly turned serious, and placed another baseball mitt of a hand back on my shoulder.
If someone is trying to eliminate those with the knowledge of the metal, you are a target just for knowing that shard exists.
I glanced down at the twisted metal piece Shakane gave me. I'll be careful, I said, and stored the 5-inch piece of metal in a nifty leather pouch strapped to the inside of my armored belt. Mech and I finally parted ways, and I decided to do the rounds and see if everyone was ready to go. After waving at Arvid and Mel kicking it in the hitched cart, I decided to poke my head into the carriage mostly to see if everyone was still intact and getting along with our two guests. When I opened the door, however, I immediately noticed over half of the people inside were fast asleep. Shay and Rylan were both curled up and leaning against one of Zoe's shoulders while the Catwoman held them close. Across from them, Jenner had leaned back against the carriage wall and was snoring lightly, and Velralla had rested her head on a grinning Bowden's shoulder. "How is everything?" I whispered to Zoe, who was keeping watch.
"All is well,"
she intoned, and kept up the motion of her hand through Ryland's hair. "Where are the sisters?" I asked, as I glanced worriedly at Shay.
"I believe they have their own mode of transport they have elected to use on our way back to Ithaca,"
my catwife said. "Did Shay tell you what happened?" I asked.
"Yes, but I have a feeling she's leaving out some information."
Zoe sighed as her ears drooped.
I just can't put my tail on it.
Remember her tragic fortune she told us about? I cocked an eyebrow and Zoe nodded. Mech's sisters were there. The Catwoman's mouth fell open in a tiny O of realization, and she looked down at Shay as if seeing her for the first time.
Is she all right?
Zoe mouthed at me. She's the one who invited them over, so I really don't know, I murmured, and reached over to run my fingers through the feathers at Shay's temple. She looked like she was resting peacefully, but the faint pinch between her eyebrows told me a different story. I have more to tell you, but we should get everyone back.
Husband?
Zoe said, and caught my hand before I could leave.
You've done well by all of us, and yet I can still see there is a burden on you. Don't forget you have us to help you carry it.
Thanks, kitten, I smiled, and a knot of tension I didn't know I was carrying unlocked as if Zoe's words were the magic key. The short ride from the battle hall back to Ithaca was a good one, even though Horace decided to be cagey as fuck and patrol the caravan, which really just meant he wanted to avoid any more loaded conversations. It was fine because I used the time as well to clear and settle my own mind. A lot had happened the past day and a half, and the longer I mused over the details, the more my brain kept trying to tear everything apart in order to assemble it again. But frustratingly enough, it didn't matter which combination I ordered the details. I was still missing pieces of the bigger picture. Why was the Council interested in Doler's library? Was it really the one book Mech had given me? And where would I even begin to look? And if I did find the book's other half, then what? And why was Shakane so interested in the book? And what exactly was it that could make the fearsome Asher Lord nervous enough to obfuscate the existence of the book? If Mech could be believed, trying to pull one over on the all-seeing Osprey man was quite risky and could spell his doom. And finally, what did this have to do with my need to participate in the tithing ceremony, Gelavane, and that one guy who tried to snake me at the auction? Too many questions, and not enough information.
Husband?
Zoe's voice suddenly broke me out of the brooding I'd been doing for the past quite a while, if my surroundings were anything to go by. What? I blinked at my damp face staring back at me in the foggy bathroom mirror. Apparently I had switched to autopilot and skipped the whole disembarking process.
You've been scowling at your reflection since we unloaded from the carriage,
she replied and hooked her chin over my shoulder.
Remember what we talked about. You do not need to weigh yourself down so much.
I know, I said, and brought one of her hands around so I could kiss her knuckles. There's just a lot I don't understand yet, and I guess I need some processing time. I hope I wasn't rude. What is it we're doing again?
Zoe laughed her full chiming laughter that was always such a refreshing contrast to her naturally deeper speaking voice.
Good goddess, you did get trapped in your head, didn't you?
She purred, and then turned me around to face her so she could groom and fix my hair.
Shay has requested us in the dining hall after we've all had time to refresh ourselves from the journey. Arvid is preparing an early evening meal along with Velrala. Mel is off doing a favor for Shay, and Bodin is, supposedly, helping in the kitchen. But I think he's only there because Velrala is.
You think she likes him back? I grinned.
I did spend a good time observing them in the carriage,
she said, and smoothed a wrinkle out of my tunic.
Velrala acts like she's either annoyed or confused in the face of Bodin's attentions. But he's charming, and I'm sure it'll only be a matter of time before she gives in.
And how is our son? I asked.
He's back to being himself, but I told him he needs to be in bed for the rest of the evening,
she said, and then smirked.
He was definitely a little annoyed at that fact, but I held firm.
You're really good at this, by the way, I said, and nuzzled my nose against hers for a moment.
Good at what?
She asked as she nuzzled back. Taking care of everyone, I said. Being kind of like a mother to Rylan.
I never thought I could grow to care for a kid who was not my blood,
Zoe admitted, and tucked her head snugly under my chin.
It is not the Varthan way. But Rylan is different, and for some reason, I care more for him each day.
I understand the feeling, I said, and kissed the top of her head right between those soft ears I loved so much. But you're really good with him. And it's really sexy.
Alex.
She giggled as I dipped my head down to nibble at her pulse point.
We must be joining our guests soon.
Okay, I murmured, and then worried that same tag of delicate skin between my teeth before laving over the spot with my tongue. Just need a snack first.
If only there were time,
she breathed, and then caught my chin in her hand so she could place a scorching kiss on my mouth. She broke away after nipping my lower lip just enough to sting.
Ready?
Oh, fine, I groaned and tore myself away. With one hand, I brushed some of Zoe's hair away from her neck so I could admire the rosy bloom I sucked into her pale flesh, like the bruise of a peach. We'll continue this later. Shall we see what our wife has planned? We kissed one more time, threaded our fingers together, and then left the third floor in search of the dining hall, and stopped dead at the sight. The last time I passed through this room, it was a dingy circular space with moldy drapes, dull brown paint, and no table or chairs in sight. Now, the drapes got upgraded to a shimmery satin blue and were opened to reveal the half-dozen floor-to-ceiling stained glass windows bathed in the late afternoon glow. In the center of the room was a circular table almost as impressive as King Arthur's, and it was surrounded by several comfortable-looking cushions and poofs. The whole ensemble was, of course, sunken into the stone floor in the way that was traditionally popular for Aventhole interior design. And my dumbfounded gaze tracked upward and marveled at the large crystalline chandelier that was dusted and polished to a high shine. When the sunlight sparkled through the dangling crystals, the light fractured just like it did in the greenhouse, and I wondered if the chandelier was made out of the same kind of glass. I didn't even know this room looked like this, I said, as I looked around the opulent yet tasteful space.
Me either,
Zoe said, as she walked up to the round table with a series of stemless champagne-type glasses that all had varying amounts of pale yellow liquid inside and were arranged in some pattern as a decorative centerpiece. Some only had a little of the substance, and others were filled nearly to the brim. And when I got closer, I could smell a sweet aroma wafting from them.
Careful! Those are not for drinking!
Shay's musical voice trilled, as the resplendent Phoenix woman floated into the room in a pale green dress with a tasseled rope belt that showed off her hourglass waist.
Well, at least not yet.
Hey, I said, and went over so I could give her a hug. This place looks amazing! How did you have time to do this?
I have my ways,
she said, and threaded her fingers through the hair at the back of my head. How are you, really? I asked her, as I tried to see behind the mask of normality she was trying hard to maintain.
Fine,
she said, and pulled out of my embrace. Which meant the total opposite, if I was learning how to speak woman correctly. Before I could question her further, however, the entrance of Arvid wheeling a large cart with multiple silver-covered domes interrupted the moment. Behind him was Velrala holding two pitchers of water and wine, respectively, and Bodin trailed after her with a tray of glasses and a small bowl of tithe stones. Finally, the last to arrive were Horus and the two mech sisters as he escorted them in on each arm. Now that they'd shed their nondescript brown cloaks, the sisters were clad in matching white cotton dresses that were long-sleeved but left the tops of their shoulders bare. Other than a set of matching gold pendants that looked like a sun balanced on the peak of a mountain, they were unadorned of anything else.
Welcome to Ithaca,
Shay said, and folded her hands in front of herself like the perfect hostess.
I hope you enjoy the fare Arvid has prepared. It is one of Natus' delicacies. A 5-course meal of ash root soups 3 ways, roasted valley squab, and cloud cake for dessert. Please sit wherever you are comfortable.
At first, I worried things would be awkward, and I could tell Horus was likewise concerned by the way he kept glancing between the quiet mech sisters and Shay, as if she was a ticking time bomb. But my Phoenix wife was as gracious as ever, and she kept the conversation easy but low pressure.
Do you think she's mad?
Zoe whispered to me when we finished the 3 courses of soup. She leaned into me and reached for something to nibble on from my plate for some reason.
She doesn't look mad.
Who, Shay? I asked, and then chased her questioning fingers playfully with my fork.
Mm-hmm,
she said, as she successfully stole some meat from me, grinned, and then stuffed it in her mouth.
I've been watching.
You have you? I asked, as I eyed her up and down and took note of her rosy cheeks and low-lidded gaze. What else have you been up to? Drinking a little wine?
No wine,
she said and shook her head.
I don't want to get drunk.
Then my tipsy catwife lifted one of the stemless champagne glasses up to her lips and took a drink of that weird liquid Shay specifically told us not to drink. Okay, how about some water, I said, as I intercepted the glass and replaced it with mine. I took a sniff, but when all I could smell was a faint floral scent, I almost tried some just to see what the fuss was about.
Shay's been watching, too,
Zoe said before I could take my chances with the mysterious drink, and the way she listed to the side made me think twice once and for all. Here, Zoe, maybe have some bread, I chuckled, and ripped off a hunk of the crust loaf for her to nibble on. Now, what about Shay?
Hmm?
Zoe slowly blinked and swallowed her mouthful of bread.
Hmm. Oh, I said Shay has been watching, too. Specifically, the way her brother looks at the woman with the long hair. Who is she again?
Her name is Anwar, and her sister's name is Amaya, I said.
Amaya.
Zoe sighed as she put her head on my shoulder and idly swirled an odd pattern into the leftover juices on her plate.
That's a lovely name.
Don't forget to drink your water, kitten, I said, and tried my hardest not to laugh at her dopey state.
Okay,
she said, and sat up straight so she could dutifully drink some water. Just then, the doors to the dining hall opened, and in strode Ithaca's missing resident, Mel, carrying in one of the hand-woven hives for the bumblebirds.
It took a little coaxing, but I finally convinced Lula to put on a show for us like you requested, m'lady,
the raccoon man said, as he settled the hive on the far end of the table no one was sitting on.
Mel, just in time,
Shay cheered.
We have your meal waiting for you under the warming lids.
Shaylee, what have you prepared for us? Horus asked, and then leaned in between the mech sisters.
My sis, always such a good hostess. Her galas are legendary.
You should have seen the one she threw for me when I got into the academy.
Oh, Russ, Russ?
Shay interrupted.
If you don't be quiet, I will instead tell them about the gala Mother threw for your 12th season.
I would like to hear that story, I piped up. No, he shouted, and then cleared his throat. Nobody wants to hear that boring tale. We're all much more interested in that thing there, whatever it is you have planned. Shay gave her brother a deadpan look, but then she smiled her usual sunny smile as she glanced at the rest of us.
I've only ever read about this, and I hope I got my measurements correct,
she said with a nervous blush.
But I do hope you will enjoy it.
Then the Phoenix Woman whistled a tune, and the one-winged Bumblebird Queen peeped out of the top of the hive and then hopped on a twig. The pretty creature cocked her small arrow-shaped head and then looked at the assembly of filled glasses. Then she twittered, and all of the bumblebirds swarmed in a large chiming mass, until the chaotic din began to smooth out almost like an orchestra tuning itself. When the swarm was all congregating in the same counterclockwise fashion, Lula chimed, and like a mini maestro, she began to conduct. As if following some invisible sheet music, the bumblebirds would one by one drop down until their hovering bubble-like force fields were just on the inside of the glass. Because of the rapid vibration of their dragonfly wings, the glasses resonated similar to someone running their finger around the rim of true crystal, and I understood the reason for the different amounts of liquid poured into each glass. When all of the bumblebirds played their crystal glasses in concert, the whole effect was like watching a symphony combined with something out of Willy Wonka. All of us were captivated as the hive mind of Queen Lula took us on a musical adventure with all the highs and lows of an epic tale, and the music was so vivid, I wondered if everyone else was experiencing the same ride. Finally, the symphony rose up into a frenzied crescendo that lent itself to a victorious battle of some kind, and the music swelled to completion with a triumphant tuba noise, sort of. Everyone froze, even the bumblebirds, and then whipped their heads in the direction of the flat note, which just so happened to be the one sitting right in front of Zoe. Three things happened, and each was more entertaining than the last. First, the Catwoman's ears flattened against her ebony head, her hand clapped over her mouth, and then she snorted a huge laugh through her nose. This just made her shake harder until she finally lost the battle, and giggled and snorted so endearingly I couldn't help but start to chuckle along with her. Shay's eyes locked with mine, and she blinked those emerald orbs before she, too, started to giggle. From there, the humor caught on like wildfire, until the whole table was roaring with laughter. Even the sisters were dabbing at their eyes as they leaned into each other for support through gales of laughter.
Oh, look!
Zoe gasped, as the bumblebirds began to groove in a figure-eight pattern, like they were laughing too. So, it appears as if Zoe accidentally confused her drink with one of these, I said, and held up the one half-drained. What the dark hell is even in these?
Oh!
Shay said and reached for a glass.
I almost forgot. The bumblebirds sprinkle their pollen over the woot brandy and make it less potent and more flavorful. Alone, it tastes similar to water, but it is quite strong.
It's a good thing she only had a few sips, I said, as Zoe continued to snicker against me with her head buried in my chest.
This tastes so wonderful,
Amaya said, as she looked down into one of the tall glasses.
It's like tasting what the sun tastes like.
At that, everyone grabbed their own glass and took a sip. The woot brandy went from a pale yellow to a golden wheat color that even had a frothy head of foam, as if the pollen had caused some sort of chemical reaction. And when I took a sip, I was reminded of a nice, fruity Hefeweizen.
How fascinating, Jenner enthused, as he licked the foam from his upper lip. What was that display you showed us?
It's called a Bumblebird Concerto,
Shay explained.
An apiarist discovered how this little species relates its history. Based on the configuration of the glasses, this concerto is about the Battle of the Two Queens.
You mean the little bug things have recorded history?
Velralla said as she grasped her own glass. The cockatoo woman's normally cynical face had never looked so full of wonder before, and I smiled at the sight of her settled under Bowden's arm.
They are quite smart, the little sprites.
Anwar said as she observed one perched on her finger. What a fantastic idea, Horace said, and nudged his sister. Shay looked down at her hands for a moment before she smiled up at him with an expression that meant she probably forgave him. Zoe's head thudded against my shoulder again, and she released a heady sigh that meant she was probably on her way to Slumberland.
Oh, the poor darling,
Shay said when she caught sight of the sleepy cat girl nuzzling into my chest.
I really should have taken better care.
Nah, she's having a blast. Don't even worry, I said, and hugged her close. She's been taking care of everyone lately, and I bet she's been needing a moment to relax. I'll just take her to bed, though. Jenner, would you mind?
Not at all, Mr. Alex,
the koala man said, and stood up on the cushioned bench seat.
Come here, Zoe. There's a lass.
He then helped her uncling from my side so I could stand up from the sunken table. All right, kitten, I said, and pulled her up so I could support her. Let's get you to bed.
Okay,
she said again and slumped into me.
Shay, it was a beautiful party.
Sweet dreams, dear heart,
the Phoenix woman said with a wave. Zoe was out like a light the minute I got her upstairs, and her head hit the pillow like a ton of bricks. I hope you drank enough water, I chuckled, as I took off her shoes, tucked her in, and kissed her on the forehead. Then I exited into the corridor and jaunted down the stairs, intent on returning to the party. But before I could get back to the dining hall, I was practically knocked flat on my ass when I rounded the next corner.